It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Oh, yes, it is here in the greatest country in the world, coming to you from the great state of Texas, where we like our summers hot, our beer cold, and our razor wires sharp. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy today. We have a big show coming up, and you can be a big part of it at 888-788-9910, 888-788-9910. The rules are the same as always. You can be a Republican, you can be a Democrat, you can be from the planet Zortferbel. We don't care. Just don't be a boop, you know what. Well, the children at the daycare center at MSNBC threw a temper tantrum this week, and the invertebrate leftist caregivers in charge of that laggard, terrible network caved in. Ronna McDaniel was until recently the chairwoman of the Republican National Committee. I will confess that I was not a fan. Her full name is Ronna Romney McDaniel. She is the niece of Senator Mitt Romney, squish Republican of Utah. She is of the establishment wing, as it's come to be called, of the Republican Party. I don't think her tenure as chair of the party will go down in history as the organization's shining hour. Under her leadership, the Republican has a less than stellar record in congressional races. There was no red wave that we expected in 2022. Fundraising has lagged terribly, badly. The Democrats have in the bank a multiple of the money the Republican Party has in the bank. GOP goes into this incredibly critical election year at a very, very significant fundraising deficit. That kind of was her job. The Democrats are going to be able to carpet bomb the living bejeebers out of the key congressional districts that will make the difference as to who controls the Congress when this election is over. So as to Ronna McDaniel and the Republican National Committee, my take is, see you later, good riddance. But when Ronna left, she quickly got another job. She got hired by MSNBC to be the token Republican in that lefty fever swamp that poses as a news network, and she lasted about 72 hours. Rachel Maddow and the rest of the crybaby liberals at MSNBC threw a hissy fit. They accused her of gaslighting the network when she was interviewed by them when she was at the RNC. They accused her of being an election denier, and they tied her to Trump in January 6th. All the things that you cannot do. Here is MSNBC's Nicole Wallace, cut to.
In this instance, NBC News, either wittingly or unwittingly, is teaching election deniers that what they can do stretches well beyond appearing on our air in interviews to peddle lies about the sanctity and integrity of our elections, which Ronna McDaniel did yesterday at Meet the Press. There were no problems. But what we've also said to election deniers is not just they can do that on our airwaves, but that they can do that as one of us, as badge-carrying employees of NBC News, as paid contributors to our sacred airwaves.
Yes, they're sacred airwaves. You know, not a trace, not a glimmer, not one part per million, teeny little bit of irony or recognition of the fact that MSNBC spent 4 years, night after night after night after night, denying the results of the 2016 election that Donald Trump won. The Democrats and their enablers at that liberal cesspool like NBC have not accepted a single presidential election won by a Republican since George W. Bush won in 2000. Every night on MSNBC, it was the Russia collusion hoax. They did not accept Donald Trump's victory, and now they turn right around and say Ronna McDaniel is the devil for allegedly denying the election. Here's why they don't want to accept any Republican's victory. When a Republican wins, it's because people in the heartland of America, people like you, people like me, people that live in this big, broad continent between those long, thin slivers of blue real estate on the east and west coasts, it's because we in the big, broad, muscular heartland managed to prevail over the coastal elites. What you have to understand their motivation, is that if you live in Texas, or if you live in Kansas, or Nebraska, or Iowa, or Oklahoma, or South Dakota, or any of those bright red states on the electoral map, coastal liberals really do think that they are better than you. It goes to the very founding of the country, because the British colonists landed on the East Coast, because the Mayflower landed on the East Coast. Kind of stands to reason that the oldest and most tenured parts of the culture and the economy are located there. The other driver of our culture, the entertainment industry, is located on the West Coast, simply because the weather most days of the year in California and the South was especially suitable for making movies. The elite universities like Yale and Harvard and Princeton and Brown, whose graduates are disproportionately represented in the top levels of our government, are all located in the Northeast, mostly in coastal states. The media industry is headquartered in the space of just a few square blocks in Midtown Manhattan. The largest exchange in the world for trading corporate securities, a.k.a. the New York Stock Exchange, is in Lower Manhattan. Theater around the world is defined by what happens between about 46th and 54th streets along a thoroughfare in Midtown Manhattan called Broadway. The largest banks in the country are headquartered in New York. The government is, of course, headquartered in Washington, D.C., but it is tethered to New York via the only profitable passenger train in the country. Amtrak Corridor is a thing. So Northeast liberals and West Coast liberals really do think that they are better than you and me, and a very, very tiny little cohort of them. The faces you see on TV and the bylines you read in the New York Times and the Washington Post and Vanity Fair and publications like that believe that they are, by virtue of their access and their location and their personal connection to the people whose hands are on the actual levers of power in the country, they believe that they are better informed and uniquely suited and much better than you to decide whose hands get to be on those powerful levers. Ronna McDaniel getting run out of MSNBC and Donald Trump being prosecuted within an inch of his life are actually connected. If the elites in New York and Washington weren't afraid that rubes like us might vote in sufficient numbers as to overrule the decisions that the elites have made as to who should be in office, Ronna McDaniel wouldn't have been fired about 5 minutes after she got there, and nobody would be prosecuting Donald Trump. You gotta understand this. These people really, really believe that you and I and our friends and the people who, I don't know, work on our cars and fix our plumbing and cut our hair and sell us our insurance policies and dry clean our clothes and fix our air conditioners are not capable of making good decisions as to who should be in charge of the government. We're just too unsophisticated, we're just too uneducated, and we lack that unique insight that comes from going to the elite universities and hanging out with the elite powerful people. These people have no desire at all to engage in any sort of principled debate as to which policies will best serve the interest of a prosperous, free, safe, and secure country. They sure don't want us asking any questions. Here's an exchange, I think it happened yesterday, between White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre and Mark Garrison of WBT in Charlotte, North Carolina. WBT is not in New York, not in Washington, not in Hollywood. WBT's in Charlotte. He dared to ask a question that is on the mind of everyone who's paying attention, including Democrats. He asked her this, cut five.
They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
That is an incredibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
Costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow.
Well, you hear that? Change the subject and bail out. You get hung up on. You're not allowed to ask. And the reason you're not allowed to ask is because they've got nothing. They got nothing to run on. They don't have a record they can defend in front of the voters. The border is a mess. People are having trouble paying for their groceries. Gasoline costs too much. The cities are exploding and falling apart in crime. There is nothing the Democrats can point to and say there's a success. They therefore cannot withstand any questions or any debate. They don't want to debate you. They want to silence you. And that's why Ronald McDaniel got run out, because Ronald McDaniel might accidentally say something that runs counter to their narrative. That's why if in 2020, in the year 2020, if you tweeted something raising the question, why did they stop counting votes in Fulton County, Georgia, because of an overflowing toilet, and tell us it was a water main break? That tweet gets taken down. When I, myself, in a TV piece that I did, dared to even raise the question as to why the hell are we locking down the entire economy over COVID? Is anybody considering, as bad as COVID may be, what's going to happen if the what's going to be the impact of locking down the economy? That YouTube post got taken down. I was given a stern warning that if I did it again, my account would be deleted. You're not allowed to ask. These people, these coastal elites in media, entertainment, finance, big tech, and government simply believe that you and I making decisions as to who should be president is akin to letting a 9-year-old drive the car on the freeway. That cannot be allowed to happen. So get rid of a voice that might say something to challenge the narrative of the lefty femboys and the Karens at MSNBC. It's not like Ronald McDaniel is some hard-right conservative firebrand, but no matter, we cannot run the risk. Use the law enforcement power of the government to keep an unacceptable candidate like Donald Trump off the ballot, lest knuckle-draggers like us vote for him in sufficient numbers to get him elected. They prosecute Trump, they demonize Trump, they demonize anyone with any connection to Trump for the simple reason that they have nothing to run on. Their only case for their guy is that he isn't our guy. The condescension is truly unbelievable. And if you think it's about Trump, it's not really about Trump. It's about you and me. It's about us out here trying to live our best life, trying to make our livings, trying to pay the bills, educate our kids, provide for our old age, keep a roof over our heads, keep food on the table, and have a little bit left over to do something we enjoy doing. That's what we're trying to do. This is the America that they condescend to, and that's why we are the target and we are the problem. They believe that possessed of their superior educational credentials and their superior connections should be trusted to order our lives for us, right down to what we say in a public forum, what kind of car we drive, and how cool or warm we keep the house. These people hold you and me and folks like us in dripping, condescending contempt. It's not Democrats versus Republicans or even liberals versus conservatives. It's elites versus rubes, and we are the rubes. What do you think? 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failey here on Fox Across America, waiting to hear from you.
The reviews are in.
That is a disgusting act, and it's unfortunate that we had that on our air live.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failey.
Guys, are you the same guy that you were 10 years ago? Everybody's been there. You wake up one morning, you feel like you're getting old, man. Stuff hurts. What do I do? One idea is to use the powerful testosterone booster in Nugenix Total T, because it will revive your energy. It'll power up the workouts, might even put the old fire back in the bedroom. Hey, girl, your old self is back. You'll feel amazing on this stuff. So tap the brakes on the aging process, because every day that passes is a day you lose testosterone. That means less muscle, means less energy, and it does mean less get up and go in the bedroom. And are you really ready to lose all of it? The shape, the muscle, the energy. Are you ready to get old? Okay, you don't have to. You can slow it down with Nugenix Total T. It boosts free and total testosterone. It helps you get the old fire back at work, in the gym, and in the bedroom. Nugenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Tesner. It'll help you turn back the clock and re-energize your life. And prove it to yourself. Try Nugenix Total T before you buy. There is nothing to lose. Get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T when you text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy. Text now and get a bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, the newest and most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you lose fat and get lean fast. It is absolutely free. Your complimentary bottle awaits. Text 231-231 and enter keyword Jimmy. Text 231-231 and enter the keyword Jimmy.
Texting enrolls you into recurring automated text messages. Consent not required. required to purchase. Message and data rates apply. Number one doctor recommended brand by primary care physicians based on an independent survey conducted by IQVIA 2022.
If you'd like to be a part of the program, phone lines are sitting in for Jimmy Failla. Do you feel condescended to? Do you feel about like you're being looked down upon by the Rachel Maddows of the world, by Karine Jean-Pierre, by members of the administration, by the elite leaders of our government? Do you feel like you're being looked down upon? One of the great things about this country is that ordinary people get out of bed every morning and they soldier on no matter what. They get up and they go to work and they make things and they fix things and they deliver things and they answer phone calls and they fix the air conditioner and they staff the stores at retail. They do things that have to be done in order for the country to work, and they do it despite all the things that that get put in their way, which includes higher prices and a tougher time buying groceries, and a tougher time affording the necessities of life, and business regulations for small business owners. People get up and just gamely soldier on. That's what makes the country great. Those are the people that are making things work. That is some of you out there listening to this show. Do you feel like you are being appropriately appreciated, or do you feel like you're being looked down upon and told how you should live your life? And do you get the sense that the reason that they're so just rabidly opposed to Donald Trump having a place on the ballot, doing everything they can to kick him off, including using the apparatus of the federal government's law enforcement power to try to keep him from being a viable candidate, using law enforcement to do the work that should be done in the public square of debate? Do you feel like that they're not wanting to debate, they just want to silence you so they can get it their way? I cannot imagine why, if the Fox News Channel can put up with Juan Williams, that MSNBC couldn't stand Ronna McDaniel. Because the two are pretty much analogous. Juan Williams, he was on the air last night, said, "Hey, this channel puts up with me. Why can't they put up with Ronna McDaniel?" Why are they so afraid to have anybody in the room that might challenge the narrative? And the answer is because they got nothing. They got nothing to run on. They don't have a single success story to point to, going all the way back to Obama and Obamacare. Obamacare didn't deliver on a single one of its promises. It was a failure. Healthcare costs more today than it did before Obamacare was enacted, and we were promised it would be just the opposite. The Biden administration, go down the list. The border is a catastrophe. Ukraine is a hot European war that broke out on his watch. It didn't break out on his predecessor's watch. The shambolic withdrawal from Afghanistan announced to the world that we were weak and feckless and vulnerable. I promise you that would not have happened during Donald Trump's presidency. Inflation got reignited by incredible spending, going out buying votes, and Biden continues to try to buy votes for giving student debt and doing anything he can to go to groups that he thinks might vote for them if he just buys them off. And these people that, you know, they cannot connect that the reason that the free money they got during COVID is the reason they can't afford groceries today. So there's nothing that they can run on and say that has been a success. The only thing they can do is demonize the other side. And in this case, because we on the right, the Republican Party has decided, after vigorous debate, has decided that it is going to be Donald Trump. Your thoughts on all of that? 888-788-9910. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. Looking forward to hearing from you. I want to talk about these things. You know, the reality is the people on the left, the Ronna McDaniel, not the Ronna McDaniels, well, the Rachel Maddows of the world, don't want us to have a voice for fear that we might use it. They don't really trust the constitutional system that we've set up because it might actually work. if you really, really, really believe in that your guy is better and our guy is worse, argue on the merits. Just let's just have the debate. Instead of debate, they want silence, and that's why you get what you get from the crybabies at MSNBC, and that's why you get all this lawfare against Donald Trump. It's really because they don't think you have anything useful to say. Let's talk about that after the break. Stay with us. You know, in my lifetime, there have been 7 Republican presidents and 6 Democrats. Since 1995, when Newt Gingrich led the Republican takeover of the Congress, Republicans have had outright control 8 times. Democrats have had control 3 times. There have been 3 occasions when one party controlled the House while the other party controlled the Senate. Hi, it's Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. All of that to say that a constant back and forth between Democrats and Republicans has defined American politics for over a century. But that's not necessarily the case today. Somewhere back there, and I'm going to say it was during the presidency of Bush the Elder, the contest quietly shifted from Democrats versus Republicans to elites versus the folks. In a sense, it's almost as if new political parties got formed. And because the folks were slow to notice, the elites have had the upper hand for upward of 4 decades. For the most part, the elites have aligned with legacy Democrats, but there are plenty of elite-aligned Republicans. One of them was the GOP nominee in 2012. His niece was, until just very recently, the chairman of the Republican National Committee. We're talking about Mitt Romney and his niece, Ronna McDaniel. Ronna Romney McDaniel. The elites, God bless them, have given us. Here's what we have gotten for 30-plus years of being led by the elites. $34 trillion in national debt, debilitating costly foreign wars, a near-complete breakdown in public education, decaying crime-riddled cities, a wide-open southern border through which approximately 10 million people have flowed in just 3 years, rampant crime, a couple of near-economic collapses, and now crushing inflation. And all the while, the folks, I'm talking about you and me, out here in the heartland, we've had a time of it, except for that all-too-brief but wonderful interlude. During the last 3 years of the Trump presidency, middle-class incomes have failed to outpace inflation, and aggregate American wealth has declined. We are not supposed to be getting less wealthy. We're supposed to be getting more wealthy. That's how you grow a prosperous country, and it hasn't been happening under the leadership that the people at MSNBC think we ought to have. And that's why a Donald Trump, a guy with no political experience prior to 2016, a guy with no political skills in the traditional sense, a guy that is kind of a bull in a china shop, is given to verbal wild pitches, is given to intemperate statements, is often boorish in his behavior. That's why a guy like him succeeded in 2016 and is teed up to probably succeed again in 2024. It had gotten to the point where if you didn't get a Donald Trump, you'd have to invent one. And that's kind of where we are. Your thoughts, 888-788-9910. Mike, your thoughts from Vermont. What do you say?
Paul, thank you. And you are an excellent host, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Listen, everything, as I said to you, and I forget your screener's name who I spoke with, but
that would be said, the incomparable Mike. Yeah. Same as you.
Well, that's probably why I couldn't remember it. Anyhow, as I said to Mike, everything one needs to know about the Democrats, I don't want to generalize, but the leftist Democrat was spoken for or displayed by NBC and their hosts, if you will, all of them. They couldn't have had any debating in college or high school. They're of monolithic thinking. They don't want any ideas or suggestions or to make the country better. They have no interest in making the country better. It's not about that for them. It's just about staying in power. I don't know what the attraction is, frankly, from, you know, the coastal elites. I thought elites were we're supposed to be smarter somehow, or I don't understand, but it's just, it's outrageous.
Well, you know, you say smarter somehow. I went and did this studies now. I did it, a year or two ago, some time ago. I just went and picked all the top people in government. I'm talking about the executive branch and the leadership of Congress, cabinet secretaries, top people at the top agencies, leadership in Congress. It's incredible what a huge percentage of them come from Ivy League institutions. They come from Harvard, Yale, Princeton, the old big money, big brand name universities to whom every high school kid aspires at some point. The institutions that represent the very best of the best, supposedly. Well, if they're that good, if the education is that good, if it is that superior to the point that you populate all your government with it, why in the world have they made such a hash of it?
Well, no, I know that's a rhetorical, and you're absolutely right, but we've seen of late, as in, you know, Harvard and the rest of them, that it's a garbage education. I heard somebody say once, Paul, to me, they said, you know the difference between for free and for nothing? And his response was, my education was for free.
Okay. All right. I get that.
They're paying thousands, tens of thousands of dollars for a garbage education.
Hundreds of thousands, not tens. Hundreds.
Indoctrination, and the parents are willingly paying for it, which means I guess that's the background they come from. But this, if Trump doesn't win this go around, I'm afraid we're. I'm an immigrant here myself from north of the border. I moved here because I love this country, but I'm really disillusioned, I guess, with the way things are going.
You know, we need somebody in leadership from Wichita State. You know, we need some people that come from the University of Nebraska, and from Tulsa, University of Tulsa. We need people that are in the heartland that have some exposure to how the middle class in America works.
Hardworking Americans.
Yes, that get up every day and make sure that everything works like it's supposed to. They go to work and they fix things, sell things, and invent things and make things. That's what Americans do.
I think a prerequisite for being in politics, you have to forget the law degree. We know what that's used for. But you have to have been in business, or you have to have worked hard. You have to have had some kind of personal success in the business world and bring that to the table. And that'd be worth a lot more than your law degree or your Ivy League indoctrination, you know?
Well, yeah. Mike, I appreciate it. You're right. Good stuff. Glad you called.
Paul, thank you for your time, sir, and thanks to Mike, your screener.
Well, Mike heard you, and he is appreciative of your thanks. Appreciate the call. 888-788-9910. You know, we talk about the elites. As I sit and think about, well, who are these elites, Paul, you're talking about? Who are these elites? Well, they're really broken down into three groups. We have three kind of distinct cohorts of elites. The first are the political elite. They hold the leadership positions within the respective parties. They mouth all the appropriate words to their respective bases and make all the requisite campaign promises. But the only real concern that they have, most of them, the political elite, is the retention of power, with all of the attendant perks and financial rewards. And don't think for a minute, there's not huge financial rewards. So the political elite, that's one group of them. Then you have the corporate elite. They sit in the executive suites of our largest companies. They sit in the executive suites of our largest companies that were at one time viewed as conservative. They're not anymore. They've largely, the corporate elites have figured out how to co-opt the legislative in regulatory apparatuses of the government for the furtherance of their own personal and financial interests. The corporate elite can promote leftist causes, and they do, like gender equity and critical race theory and DEI and all those things. They can do all those things with impunity, knowing because as a practical matter, you can't take your business elsewhere. And then finally, we have the cultural elite. Those are the people that control television, the movies, music, entertainment, theater, primary and secondary schools. That's huge. Universities, huge. Book publishing, journalism, if you still want to call it that. From those commanding heights, the cultural elites can impose upon us this never-ending diet of liberal grievance, gay and gender grievance, racial grievance, environmental grievance, all these grievances in a country that ought to be happy. We won the lottery. We were born here. We were born on this incredibly rich, naturally rich continent. We were born to a society that was founded by visionary men who believed in the sanctity of the individual and in freedom and in liberty. If you get born here, you have won the lottery. You don't have to walk across Mexico and cut through razor wire to get here. If you were born here, you've been given the greatest gift. We should be the absolute happiest people in the world. And yet we have the cultural elite pushing all this grievance. And they're doing it for the most cynical of reasons. If you can get people aggrieved, you can control them and you can use them for your own purposes. And that's exactly what's happening. You know, the idea that America is systemically racist is complete bunk. It's wrong. We're not systemically racist. We have moved well past that. Are there racists out there? Of course. There are and there always will be. But as a country, we are the most welcoming, open, least racist country on the planet. It is illegal in this country to discriminate against anybody because of their race. Not only is it illegal, it's socially unacceptable. So why is everybody so upset? And the answer is because our elites are stirring it up. Elites of all stripes, don't forget, don't fail to know this, of all stripes, they hold you, the folks, in utter contempt. If you don't live near the coast, if your college diploma, assuming you even have one, isn't from a very short list of elite-approved universities, if you earn your living in any way that involves actual physical labor, if you have to wipe your hands before you can shake somebody else's, if you regularly go to church, if you don't know the finer points regarding the ordering of wine in a five-star restaurant, they think you are smelly and deplorable, and they don't think you're smart enough to order the affairs of your own life, and they sure as hell don't think you should have a say in who gets to be president. That's what we're really dealing with here. It is this condescension that's got everybody on edge. You say, well, Paul, the country's really divided. Well, yeah. Get told you're stupid long enough, you're going to kind of take your side. You're going to calcify in your position. I don't think it's the Republicans doing the dividing. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it's us on the left, on the right doing the dividing. I think it's the Democratic Party doing the dividing, and it's not pretty. So that's what we're up against. So your thoughts, 888-788-9910. If you're on hold, we're going to get to you here on Fox Across America, Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Fallon.
You're listening to the man with the fashion sense that's all his own.
Looks like a gay bag lady.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon.
It is Fox Across America, Paul Gleiser from the great state of Texas, filling in for Jimmy Fallon here today, taking your calls, 888-788-9910. Joe in Flint, you're next. Flint, Texas, by the way. You're next on Fox Across America. What say you?
Good day, sir.
Yes,
one of
sir.
The greatest voices on radio you have.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. I'll get that Venmo on the way to you right away.
Okay. I was more interested in hearing what you have to say as opposed to what I have to say. So let me ask you a question with a little bit of follow-up, if I could.
Okay.
My question is, do you sincerely think we can vote our way out of this mess? Mr. Trump, who I've never voted for, I don't particularly care for the man, but that's beside the point. I certainly didn't vote for Mr. Biden. But the point is that we have the unelected administrative state. And what Mr. Trump essentially did was put things in abeyance for about 4 years. So, and then Mr. Biden took over, and now we've got this melange that we have right now. So Mr. Trump comes back in, we got maybe another four years of a stopgap measure. So how do you get rid of the unelected administrative state?
All right, let me see if I can address that from how I see it. Number one, I don't think Donald Trump, I don't think any of us really appreciated on January the 20th, 2017, when he took office, just how deeply entrenched and how completely intractable the permanent administrative state is. I think Donald Trump was caught by surprise on that. He won't be caught by surprise again. He now knows what he's up against, so he won't be caught flat-footed on that. So that's number one. Number two, it is incredibly important, assuming that Donald Trump wins the election, who he picks as vice president. Because the only way, 4 years is not enough, the only way you get any lasting impact on this behemoth, leviathan, massive, out-of-control, unaccountable, ungovernable federal bureaucracy is to get a good long run of somebody in the executive branch with the moxie to take it on. And they and the opposition will be fierce. They'll do everything they can to take whoever that is down. But you need somebody strong enough to pick up after Trump's second term is over and he's not eligible for re-election, that is capable of winning the election in 2028 and governing for 8 years. That would give you a 12-year run like we had with Reagan and followed by
Reagan,
Bush, where some things, some systemic things could change. So, you know, I don't know who Donald Trump is going to pick for vice president. I think for as badly as his campaign flamed out, I think Ron DeSantis could do that. I think Ron DeSantis could stand up to the federal bureaucracy. But if not him, somebody that's willing to take it on. And you know what the term fragging means? It came from the Vietnam War. It's where the enlisteds would kill an officer they don't like. The permanent federal bureaucracy is going to do everything it can to frag Donald Trump because they see him as the existential threat that he is. And the real problem that we face is too much of the government is in the hands of people that never face the voters.
Correct. Well, the only thing that I see coming up, which should be interesting, there's a case in front of SCOTUS right now, but it deals with Chevron deference. And if they deal with that, but as we've seen, the unelected administrative state has a way of working around whatever SCOTUS decides. So,
well, the EPA just this past week is effectively regulated gasoline-powered cars out of existence, not explicitly, but in net effect by making tailpipe regulations so tight that the automakers won't be able to get the corporate average fuel economy that's required of them unless they shift most of the fleet to electric vehicles. That's just one example. You can decide what kind of car you have. Hey, good stuff. Joe, appreciate the call. More of Fox Across America coming up after the top of the hour.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Oh, yes, it is. It's hour two of Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla, inviting you to weigh in, 888-788-9910. I spent the whole first hour talking about the fact that it's not that the elites running our country, running the Democratic Party, the regime believes that we shouldn't vote for Donald Trump. It's they believe we shouldn't even have the opportunity to vote for Donald Trump. They know best who we should be voting for and who not. They know who we should be nominating, if we should be nominating anybody at all. They don't want to have any kind of a contest, of a straight-up contest, between our guy and their guy, because their guy, they got nothing to run on. So the only thing they can do is try to kneecap our guy. Meanwhile, the world continues to rock on. Joe Biden is still the president of the United States. things are happening around the world and close to home. Yesterday, we all woke up to find out that an enormous tragedy had taken place in Baltimore Harbor. A cargo ship, a big cargo ship, lost power, lost steerage, could not control itself, and crashed into the support of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And did you see that video? It wasn't subtle. That bridge came down in a matter of seconds. Six people are now, I don't know if they've officially declared them assumed dead, but it's not looking good. One person was badly hurt, still in the hospital. And Baltimore Harbor, a very important port, is out of commission for the indefinite future. And Joe Biden couldn't help himself from making it about him. Here's what he had to say. Cut 10.
At about 1:30, a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times, commuting from the state of Delaware in our train or by car.
Mr. President, there are no train tracks on the Francis Scott Key Bridge. You never commuted over that bridge by train. If you did by car, good for you. But, I mean, come on. It's always got to be about him. I don't think the country survives four more years of Joe Biden. The Republican Party has decided that it's going to be Donald Trump. Thus, I am four square all in on Donald Trump. You know, we have been governed by, spent the whole first hour talking about the elites. Let's bring into the subset of the elites, the experts. Look what the experts have done to us. Look at, with a little bit of hindsight, look at what the experts were able to do to us during COVID. You know, what started as a trickle of information became a steady stream starting in about 2023 that is revealing what the experts did. And it's by increments coming out that the U.S. response to the COVID pandemic, the response that was emulated by most of the world, was deeply flawed and likely caused harm that's going to last for a generation. You know, little by little, respected, well-credentialed people armed with facts and their own expertise are tempting the truth ministers of social media and risking their reputations and careers with increasing boldness. They're daring to say out loud that the quote-unquote experts blew it. Facts are emerging that make it, increasingly clear that shutting down the economy and quarantining the healthy, that's something that has never been done in the history of pandemics. Keeping kids out of school, even though it was clear early on that kids were not at risk. Banning church services, weddings, and funerals. Forcing people to wear masks. Forcing them to submit to a hastily created vaccine. Taken all together and added up and toted up, likely did more harm than good. There are just a lot of examples. You probably never heard this because the media sure didn't cover it, but Cleveland Clinic conducted a study encompassing 51,000 of its own employees seeking to evaluate the efficacy of the COVID vaccines. It's a fantastic sample, a fantastic study, because at Cleveland Clinic, the way they dealt with the pandemic, you either had to be vaccinated or you had to submit to regular testing. But they did not force their employees to get vaccinated. What they did do was force employees to be regularly tested. They have a sample of 51,000 people. And what that survey revealed is that the more one is vaxxed and boosted, the greater the likelihood of contracting COVID. So much for the pronouncements by the experts that we all had to be vaccinated and that would stop the spread. That wasn't true. The Cochrane Library, which is, if you're in the field of medicine, is the definitive collection of essays and research and the results of randomized controlled trials and the things that serve as the database for medicine. The Cochrane Library published a review of dozens of randomized controlled trials showing that masks that we were all forced to wear, quote, made little or no difference in the transmission of COVID. There's both anecdotal and academic evidence that the mRNA COVID vaccines, the Pfizer, the Moderna, the Johnson & Johnson, may have caused widespread injury and premature death arising from cardiac injury. We do know that it didn't stop you from getting infected with COVID. What we can now see with perfect clarity, looking in the rearview mirror, looking back, hindsight, is the fact that COVID did what the experts in the elite ruling class dreamed about. Opened the door for a microscopically small group of people to arrogate to themselves nearly unlimited authority over the lives of ordinary, normal, working Americans. And those experts were aided and abetted by elite members of academia, the government, the permanent federal bureaucracy, the media, and big tech. When those who could not afford the economic effects of COVID lockdowns complained, which is to say working class people, small business owners, restaurant waiters, people that had to go to work in order to live, didn't have the luxury of working from home on their laptops, couldn't go to the Hamptons and continue to do business, the people that had to get up and go to work in order to eat, when they complained, they were dismissed as Neanderthal. Remember Neanderthal thinking? And they were dismissed as evil. And what's really troubling about all this isn't so much that the experts got it wrong, although the track record on the experts of late is on a downward trend. What's most troubling about it is that throughout it all, there was no debate permitted. You couldn't say it out loud. Lay people and dissenting scientists alike, they were shamed, set upon, silenced. Really, really smart people, three that I know of, Jay Bhattacharya, Sunetra Gupta, and Martin Kulldorff, all incredibly well-credentialed in the areas of infectious disease and epidemiology. They suffered phenomenal negative professional consequences for saying out loud and publishing in writing the great Barrington Declaration, which dared to raise questions against what the experts had said was the way to go. They dared raise questions about the advisability and consequences of locking down the economy. It was evident fairly early on that the expert class, which in this particular instance was led by the eminent Dr. Fauci, had accumulated authority to itself to infringe our very liberties, and they failed in their mission. What they did didn't work. They were wrong. We all paid the price, but as usual, those who could least afford it, the poor and the working class, paid the most, and there has been no accounting. There has been Rachel Maddow and the people at MSNBC have not run one story that looks back on what happened during COVID and said, well, we got a lot of that wrong. There has been no introspection. Nobody has paid the price. Anthony Fauci is still been in a lot of quarters, still looked upon as some godlike figure. He has never been held to account what we did. There's been no honest assessment. This is the expert class, goes along with the elite class, and this is the very thing that's got people in the heartland, middle Americans, people like you and me, upset. Because what our betters were imposing upon us was actually making life better, we wouldn't be upset. We wouldn't be a hard sell to get us to vote for them. But their prescriptions haven't worked. And we do have, you know, effectively a tired old man driving the car who doesn't see well and doesn't think well. We got people in charge that shouldn't be in charge. And things aren't working. And we are daring to say that out loud. And they're doing everything they can to shut us up. And that the symptom of that is everything they're doing to Donald Trump to try to keep him from winning elections, everything they have done to him to try to keep him off the ballot entirely, that has blown up in their faces. It looks as if you were to looking at the poll numbers, it looks as if Donald Trump can win this election, and he will be the first president to have non-consecutive terms since Grover Cleveland. That is a distinct possibility. The reason any of that is even possible is because what the other side has tried to impose upon us just simply hasn't worked. The elite ruling class and the experts have made a hash of it. Or am I crazy? Do you agree with me or disagree? I really want to know. 888-788-9910. 888-788-9910. It's Paul Gleiser. I'm sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America, coming to you from the great state of Texas, where we're getting an awful lot right, and we're keeping the migrants out as best we can to keep them from flooding into your state. We're trying to do our part. Here in the great state of Texas, we're doing our best. What do you think? 888-788-9910. More of the show's coming up. Stay with us.
Jimmy Failla.
He's got great charisma.
Yeah.
He's always dressed fantastic. He has what I call it.
This is Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
The show is called Fox Across America and not Fox Across the Northeast Corridor, because we here at this show and this organization believe in the great fundamental goodness of America and people out there making a living, working hard, putting a roof over their heads, feeding their families, doing the right thing, paying their taxes, educating their kids, and making the country go. That's what we believe. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's just too bad that a huge portion of those on the left don't really see it that way, because if you could open their eyes and get them to see just what a wonderful country it is that we live in, we'd have a whole lot less strife. We wouldn't be at each other's throats. We'd be getting along better. Prosperity would be on the rise. Safety and security would be on the rise. If you could just wrap your arms around the fact that for all this country's faults, as any country is going to have, we have so much about us that is so good. Why can't we get on the page about that instead of demonizing those with whom we disagree and calling and whipping people up into some sort of grievance about race or gender or their station in life so that their vote can be bought? If we could just look at America and say, wow, what a great place. We really won the lottery being born here. Your thoughts, 888-788-9910, Mike in Venice, Florida. Am I crazy or what?
No, you're not. I'd like to say real quick, my grandfather came from Europe. He was proud of his country, but he was proud to be an American. So, and he taught his kids get an education. And during the Depression, he refused to take a dime from the government. He was too proud. He was going to take care of his family himself. Seven kids, and he did. So,
yeah, listen, you know, I was raised by a similar family. My mother's father, my grandfather, Lewis N. Carroll, who, by the way, voted for Democrats all his life because he was a working class guy, and that's who you voted for.
That's what my family did. Guy.
You know,
and now they realize now they're all Republicans.
Yeah, well, but Lewis N. Carroll voted for Democrats all his life, but by gosh, he didn't take money from the government. He was a point of pride. He was going to feed his family if he had to work 27 hours a day.
Exactly. My grandfather had a garden in the backyard, and he worked, and he cut wood for the fireplace, for the furnace. I mean, he did what he had to do.
Yeah, and that's who built the country, Mike. I mean, that's what makes that ethic, that people like that are what made the United States the place that everybody wants to come to. You know? And if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to solve the immigration problem. It'll be real simple, and people won't want to come here. The problem solved. If you keep doing what we're doing, the day will come that this place will not be the bright, shining city on the hill, and people won't want to come here. That'll be very bad news, but the good news will be the illegal immigration problem will be gone.
Well, but then it'll be what the Democrats want. It'll be a third world nation.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, I can't imagine they in the end would want that, because what they want is power and money. If you turn it into a third world nation, you can run out of wealth.
That's how they think they can control it.
Yeah, it may be hyperbole to think, you know, the United States could become a third world nation. You know, it may sound like a tin foil hat guy, but Venezuela was once one of the most prosperous countries in the world. Per capita, at one time, it was the wealthiest nation in the world, per capita. You know, the average person in Venezuela was wealthier than any other person on the planet. And look what happened when they went to the hard left. Look what happened to Venezuela. It's You can't take for granted that this wonderful thing that we have in America will last forever on its own. It has to be protected, and you have to care about it, and you have to do the things that make it work. And that includes holding the government to account, keeping the government as small as you possibly can, consistent with defending the peace and acting as an impartial referee in the conduct of business and commerce and settling disputes in the court system and protecting the currency. There, I've just described what the government needs to do. All the rest of the stuff, to the extent that it gets involved in things, risks the government being too big and getting in the way of freedom and liberty and the things that made us great. And, you know, at one time, the Democrats and Republicans, the things that separated them was the argument over how best to solve the country's problems. That's not what the argument is anymore. The argument is, we're better, you're not, get out of our face and leave us alone. You don't have anything to say because you are fundamentally wrong on everything, thus you need to be silenced. There is no debate as to how best to run the country. They don't want a debate. They believe that they already know and that you need to go sit down and shut up. And they'll tell you what kind of car to drive. They'll tell you what kind of toilet you can have in your bathroom. They'll tell you what kind of stove you can have in your kitchen. They'll tell you how far you can drive. They'll tell you what food to eat. They're coming for your meat. They're coming for, you know, they're coming for beef because the climate change crowd has decided that all those cows out there passing gas are somehow despoiling the atmosphere, so that the give them enough time and via the regulatory apparatus of the United States Department of Agriculture, it'll become very expensive to buy beef because they're busy saving the planet from cow farts. This is how these people think. And in fact, the beautiful thing about this country is we are free. And if we get something wrong, we've had an enormously long, successful track record of self-correcting. That's what's made America great. Why can't they trust that to continue to happen? They don't trust the American people. That's what's at stake here. More of the show's coming up after the break. Stay with us. It is Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America. And the line to call if you want to be a part of the program is 888-788-9910. Listen, we follow the news of this week, aside from the tragedy in Baltimore Harbor where people have died, and the logistical impact of that story is going to last a long, long time. It's going to be a long time before Baltimore Harbor can do what it does and be the container ship depot that it is. That's going to ripple. This is a very big deal. But beyond that, in the realm of politics, Ronna McDaniel, who was the chairman of the Republican National Committee, stepped down from that post and then became a contributor at MSNBC. That lasted a lot less time than her tenure at the Republican National Committee. And Mark Wadley is now the new chair of the RNC. And Mark's on the line right now here on Fox Across America. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for being a part of the program. I got questions for you as you take over the reins of the Republican National Committee here in a critical election year, 2024. You know, everybody, we always say this is the most important election, but this one's awfully darned important. I filled in for another talk show host yesterday, a local show in Dallas-Fort Worth, had somebody on, pretty smart guy, raised a nightmare scenario, and I want to run this by you and see what you think. The nightmare scenario is this. Donald Trump wins the Electoral College and wins the presidency, but the House, with its now one-vote majority, flips, the Democrats get it, and they refuse to certify the election, and we end up in a constitutional crisis that is in a contentious episode that'll make 2000 and the hanging Chad look like a church social. What do you think about that?
Look, I think that what we need to do is make sure that we get Donald Trump elected. We need to flip the Senate, and we need to expand our majority in the House and prevent any opportunity for gamesmanship like that to take place. You know, when you think about how we need to win the House, right now it is about protecting valuable seats that we've got in places like California and New York that are we had Republicans win in Biden districts. We've got, you know, a great opportunity in North Carolina, my home state, where we've got new congressional maps. We're going to pick up four different seats. And then, of course, when President Trump wins, that's going to be a tide that's going to rise, and it's going to raise all boats. And so we feel like we're in a great position across the country because the American voters are absolutely tired of what they see coming out of the Senate, see what they come coming out of the White House. And the last thing that they want is a Congress that all day, every day is just going to go after Donald Trump. I mean, how quickly do you think that they would move to impeachment number three?
Within 30 seconds of taking the oath.
Absolutely,
and,
right.
And every single committee, the Committee on Refreshments, will be investigating Donald Trump. Every congressional committee will be holding hearings and subpoenaing Trump and his members of his administration. It'll be like Gulliver and the Lilliputians. They'll do everything they can to hamstrung a Donald Trump presidency if the Democrats retake the House.
Yeah, could not agree more. And look, the American people need more. And frankly, the world needs more. You know, the fact is that the world is a dangerous place when America is weak. And what we need is strength. And we're going to get that with Republican majorities in the House and the Senate and Donald Trump back in the White House.
Well, let me ask you this, and I'm not going to name names because I don't have his permission to name names, but a very good friend of mine who is a Republican member of Congress, he's pretty pessimistic. He's fearful that the House is going to flip. What do you say to him? How do you assuage his fears? He's close to it, and he's afraid that, you know, the redrawing of the lines in New York that got us those seats in 2022 is now gone, and there's, you know, other factors at play. You're optimistic. How do you address his pessimism?
Well, look, I would say this, that if you look at where we are today, we know that it's going to be a fight. I mean, we had, you know, a very, very narrow Republican majority. We had a very, very narrow Democratic majority. Now we've got a very, very narrow Republican majority, the narrowest majority that we've ever had. You know, the Senate has been 51-49 one way or the other. It's 50-50, you know, a lot of times. I mean, this is an evenly divided country. In order for us to win as Republicans, we need to focus on two things. We got to get out the vote, and we got to protect the ballot. And, you know, from my perspective here as the chair of the RNC, we are going to absolutely focus on those two things like a laser. I've already had a great series of conversations with Richard Hudson, who is the chair of the NRCC, a fellow North Carolina guy that I've known for 30 years, a great friend. I've met with Steve Daines and the folks on the Senate side. You know, we're in a position where if we do what we need to do in this election and we talk to the voters across the country and we just have to have informed voters because they know that what we're seeing from Joe Biden in the White House is not going to work for four more years.
Michael Whatley, he's the incoming chair, the new chair of the Republican National Committee, is on the line with us. Michael, one of the things that I think is a real concern, and it's public information, anybody can look it up, the RNC, as of today right now, is at a pretty significant money disadvantage against the Democrats.
Yeah, well, look, the fact is that you had the President Biden has been able to raise money in conjunction with the DNC for the last 4 years, and we have not had a Republican in the White House. We have not had a Republican nominee. But the fact is that about 2 weeks ago, that changed. And we do not only have a nominee, we have a great presumptive nominee in Donald Trump. There is a huge amount of excitement all across the country. We have already started to integrate our committee with his campaign. That's happening on a lot of different levels, including our finance operations. I can tell you this. We are absolutely going to have the resources that we need to take his message out to every voter across the country and make sure that we win.
Listen, I one thing about which I spoke with a caller yesterday, and this was an African-American man. He's a black man, an immigrant, a big believer in the United States, delighted to be here, but he criticizes Republicans. He says Republicans just take the fact that they're going to lose to Democrats with black voters for granted, and they don't try hard enough. He said Republicans need to be in every black neighborhood and every black church telling the story that minorities and people that are trying to make their way up the economic ladder have a better shot with Republicans in charge. And his criticism is Republicans haven't done a good job.
Well, look, I will say this, that we need to go fight for every single vote. When you think about how close the presidential is going to be, how close the Senate races are going to be, how close this congressional fight is going to be, we need every single vote. You know, the Democrats have taken black and minority votes for granted for decades. And the fact is, every single American family has the same set of issues that they are worried about. Things like jobs in the economy, education, safety, security. It doesn't matter whether you're rural or you're urban or you're suburban. These are the issues that you care about. Republican candidates listen to voters and are putting solutions on the table. And we're in a much better position than we've ever been to be able to make huge gains in the black community and other minority communities. And we've got a president who is working full time to make sure that he is reaching out to every American voter.
Michael Whatley, chair of the Republican National Committee, is on the line with us. So I think we all got caught a little flat-footed in 2020 because of all the things that got – all the voting procedures that got changed due to COVID. And there are still a whole lot of questions in a lot of precincts over what happened in the counting of votes in 2020. What is has the RNC learned its lesson, and if has learned its lesson, what will be different?
Yeah, we absolutely have been leaning forward on election integrity. It is one of our highest priorities. As I said earlier, we've got two huge things that we're focusing on: getting out the vote and protecting the ballot. When you think about election integrity, you know, my favorite analogy is I would rather have a police car parked in front of a storefront window than call the cops after a rocket's thrown through it, right? What we need to do is make sure that we have the laws, the rules, and the regulations in place in every state that are going to ensure a fair election. We need to make sure that those laws and rules and regulations are going to be followed. And then we need to recruit and train thousands of attorneys and millions of volunteers all across the country to serve as observers anytime that there is a vote being cast or counted. We need to be in the room.
Well, so how is the progress in all of that? Because time grows short. How are we doing on that?
It's going very well. We're excited. We actually last year created a new election integrity department. We've got a fantastic team that we are putting together in every single battleground state. We have teams right now of political folks plus attorneys that are in the process of recruiting and training our volunteers, recruiting and training those attorneys. I personally, since I've been the chair, have been up to Philadelphia. I've been up to Milwaukee. I've been down to Atlanta. I've been out to Phoenix to sit down and talk about the election integrity programs that we're going to have in all of these battleground states. And I can tell you my own personal experience as the chair for the North Carolina Republican Party was in 2020. We built this program. We used this model. We had 11,000 grassroots volunteers who worked 25,000 shifts in all 100 counties. We had over 500 attorneys that were on the ground in all 100 counties. And it worked. And this is a model that we're using all across the country right now. We're going to make sure that it's easy to vote and hard to cheat.
RNC Chair Michael Whatley with us. Okay, Michael, wrapping it up here. Here's the kind of the thing that worries me and something I think that Republicans need to address. We don't have Election Day anymore. We have Election Month. And the Democrats have exploited that long protracted period of voting to their benefit and to our detriment very effectively.
Well, look, and what we need to do as Republicans is we need to take advantage of the rules that are in every different state. And every different state is different. Some states you're allowed to ballot harvest, some states you're not. Where we can, we need to be doing it. Where we're not, where it's illegal, we need to do everything we can to prevent the Democrats from doing it. You know, some states where you have early voting, we need to make sure that we are turning out voters to go early. Over the course of the country, we're going to have over 50% of all votes cast before Election Day. We need to be talking to those voters, communicating with those voters before they go vote. We need to make sure that they're informed voters. We have got to really, truly drill down. We've got a program. We call it the Bank the Vote program. We've got buy-in from all of our congressional leadership, all of our Senate leadership, and we are building those programs all across the country to make sure that we get from every voter what is their plan. Are you going to vote early? Are you going to vote by mail? Are you going to vote on Election Day? I don't care how you vote. I just got to know you're going to vote, and then I need to know that you have voted in order for us to make sure every single vote gets to the polls and gets counted.
You know, one of the criticisms of early voting has been that a whole bunch of votes, tens of thousands of votes get cast before there's even the first debate. So that brings up the question of debates. Do you think there will be one?
I certainly hope there is. I think we have never before seen a bigger contrast between two candidates. And we want an opportunity for President Trump to be able to debate President Biden and be able to compare and contrast his 4 years as a leader and what the economy was like, where we were on a national security stage, the fact that we had a secure border versus where we are with runaway inflation. We've got Russia in Ukraine. We've got Israel being attacked by Iran and its proxies. China's licking its lips about Taiwan. And we've had 9.2 million illegal immigrants come across the border. We want that debate, and we want the American people to see that contrast.
Have you had any discussions with your counterpart at the DNC on that subject?
I have not had any discussions at all with my counterpart over there. We are in the process right now of making sure that we're going to have everything lined up that we need to be able to beat them. And we can meet on a softball field somewhere maybe.
Well, that may be one way to settle it. Michael Whatley, the new chairman of the RNC, the Republican National Committee, your work is cut out for you. This is going to be a very, very take nothing for granted. This is going to be a tough election.
It absolutely is. Look, we are 32 days away from Election Day, and we're going to have absentee votes and early votes that are going to be starting, you know, in some cases a month or even 2 months out. We're going to have a big election cycle for us, and we know that it's going to come down to some very key battleground states, battleground congressional districts. I feel really, really good about the team that we are building here at the RNC, and we're going to work every single day and spend every single dollar that we raise working hard to make sure that we're going to get out the vote and protect the ballot.
Michael Whatley of the RNC, the chairman, appreciate your time. You're a good sport to come on. You've taken the questions with great grace and aplomb. We've got good answers. We thank you for your time.
I really appreciate it, Paul. Have a great day.
You too. Michael Whatley, there he goes, chairman of the RNC. Here we go. More of the show coming up after the break. Don't go away.
Critics are calling it the show of the year.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
It is Fox Across America. It's Paul Glaser sitting in for Jimmy today. He'll be back tomorrow, by the way. Just taking the one day at some pressing business, and they called me, so here I am. Listen, do you remember the movie Driving Miss Daisy, that scene where Morgan Freeman is just getting hired to be the driver for Miss Daisy, and the housekeeper, and Miss Daisy's not having it, by the way. She's not happy at all. Jessica Tandy, not having it at all. And that brilliant actress that played the part of the housekeeper was looking at Morgan Freeman and says to him, "I wouldn't be in your shoes if the sweet Lord Jesus come down and asked me himself." That's kind of what you got to think about with Michael Whatley. He has a huge job as the new chairman of the RNC, coming in as Ronna McDaniel was squeezed out in a very, very contentious election year, up against a very, very well-funded Democratic Party. Don't think just because the wheels look like they're coming off the bus that the Democrats can't carpet bomb the living bejeebers out of these swing counties and swing states and make a real difference. It is going to be a food fight trying to win this election. They have nothing to run on. They don't. They got nothing. They're like what's the actor's name in Major League that, as Jimmy's talked about, putting snot on the ball. That's all they can do because they don't. The fastball's gone. The The breaking ball's not working. They got nothing. The border is a huge problem. Bidenomics. Nobody, no matter how many stats they trot out and say, look at that, inflation's down to 3.2. It's down to 3.2 on top of 18. Prices haven't gone down. They're just not going up as fast, and they're up so high that people are having trouble buying groceries. So Bidenomics is not working. The border's a mess. The Lord knows we might be on the brink of World War III. They have nothing to point to and say, this is really working, and we're proud of it, and we're successful. All they can do is spend enormous amounts of money on very, very negative campaign ads trying to trash Donald Trump. We're going to talk about that. 888-788-9910. Paul Gleiser here on Fox Across America. The next hour is coming up.
Live from Everywhere USA, it's Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Oh, yes, it is. Hour three of Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser coming to you from the great state of Texas, here in the greatest country in the world, filling in for Jimmy Failla. Jimmy will be back tomorrow. But meanwhile, today, right now, in the house, we have Taylor Riggs, co-host of the Big Money Show on the Fox Business Network. Hey, Taylor.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. So you're on the Big Money Show, so let's talk a little, let's talk some economics. The Biden camp can't decide whether to go with or run away from Bidenomics.
I know. Okay, so this is the term that they use to sort of tout Biden's economic policies, right? And they thought internally, similar to how Obama coined the phrase Obamacare, and he was really able to turn that into an asset where we don't call it the Affordable Care Act or ACA. We sort of all reference it to Obamacare. I think the Biden team originally thought, let's coin this phrase, Bidenomics, go after Reaganomics, and, you know, turn this economy into a win. The president can take credit for it.
Yeah, but Reaganomics worked.
That's bingo. So you just hit the nail on the head, right? So the problem is, I think they were really out of touch with the economy and how people feel on the ground. I know that the last time I was on with you, you and I talked a lot about the difference between, look, the stock market is at record highs. The GDP of this country, yes, is growing, but that is totally divorced from the reality that Americans face every day with food prices, with grocery prices, with gas prices, with overall inflation that is still crushing American budgets. And so when they used this phrase Bidenomics, it actually ended up hurting them, because I don't think the Biden camp realized then how irresponsible in a way it looked, that they're totally out of touch with the American people.
So if just try to put yourself in the war room for the Biden campaign, and you've got 3 years and you have something you've never had before, Taylor, you have two presidents that are running that both have a record.
I know.
We've never had that before. We have the candidate that's the opposition candidate has a record as president. And the thing that would scare me if I were on the Biden side is the record, the Trump record is vastly better than the Biden record.
Which is why they've stopped using the term Bidenomics, because I think they realized it backfired. Because with Trump, you had equity markets that were also at record highs right until COVID hit. You had GDP growing at 3% annually, which is pretty unheard of in our country. It was a huge boon. Tax cuts, reinvigoration of businesses. And so I think that's why, in a piece that I read this morning, you had Bidenomics from the president being mentioned 29 times in June of 2023, zero last month, and only once this month, and the month is almost over. And so I think they've sort of realized, we better not be focused on the economy, because when you put the economy of Biden under the economy of Trump, it actually isn't a good comparison for the Biden camp. Let's stop using that word Bidenomics and try to focus on other things, maybe abortion or whatever that might be for the Biden camp.
Okay, so if you're them, what are you running on?
You know, I don't know, because we've talked a lot, you know, on our show, when you think about sort of big money and voter issues right now. What is leading in the polls for voter issues? People care about the border and they care about the economy. Those are the top two issues, and crime. So I guess you could say, you know, you could focus on abortion, because in the midterms, we thought that the Republicans would do a lot better than they did in that red wave, which then turned into that famous Nancy Pelosi quote of a red trickle, because a lot of people then came out. That was right after Roe v. Wade was overturned.
Yeah,
people focused on abortion. That's actually what people were going to the polls on. But I feel like this time is different. Every survey that we have done with voters, they still say that that isn't on their top issue. Climate, green energy, going to electric vehicles, none of those are the top concerns. It's inflation, it's the economy, it's crime, it's border. And all of those issues are actually very related. So I don't know. You know, if I'm the Biden camp, I guess I'm trying to distract or take away, you know, from some of the price increases that we've seen. But it doesn't look good if you're just, I think, an American at home and you're still very much struggling to make ends meet. And you feel like you have people in charge in Congress who aren't hearing you and aren't listening to you and aren't creating policies that are helping you put food on the table.
Taylor Riggs, the co-host of the Big Money Show on the Fox Business Network, with us. Taylor, I'm not that bright a guy, so I need you to explain this to me. No, I'm not that bright. So explain this to me. If as you just said, the top issues are not the are the border and the economy, and it's very clear just looking at the marketplace that the market is rejecting electric vehicles.
Yeah,
I mean. And the CEO of Hertz bet heavily on electric vehicles, cost him his job.
Yep.
Ford has curtailed electric vehicle production. It's just not working. What is the I'm amazed at the timing of the EPA issuing regs this past week that, you know, have the effect of pushing us further toward electric vehicles.
Okay, so you know I just ran here. My show got out at exactly 2 p.m., and I ran here to get to you in time. And I ran here because I just got off an interview with the Nissan Motor America's head. And this is fascinating because out of the 30 new vehicles they're launching in the next few years, 16, so over half, are EVs, electric vehicles. So we asked him,
why?
How are you doing this when the consumer has been so crystal clear that they don't like EVs, they're worried about range anxiety, they want choice. If you want an EV, good for you, you can make that choice. You don't want it forced down your throat by the EPA. His response was, those numbers that we're citing, 16 out of 30 vehicles are going to be electric vehicle, are the international global market. In the US, he said, out of the 7 new cars that we're launching, only one is an EV and one is a hybrid. The other 5 are normal gas engine because they have been so clear on how the consumer is reacting, at least in the US, to EVs and mandates. And I think it was a really good interview because he said this comes down to choice. We want the consumer, especially in America, who still has a very different psyche on EVs than Europeans, we want them to be able to have a choice. So we're providing options, but only one EV, one hybrid. That's a good, people I think actually are liking hybrids, and that's a good hybrid model, right? Between battery and an internal combustion engine.
Makes sense.
And that he talks about range anxiety is real. And you know what else he talked about that was fascinating? He said in the US, our EV customers, it's not their first car. It's if you are wealthy enough to have 2 or 3 or 4 cars. You have the first 1 or 2 cars are normal gas cars. Your EV is like your fun, short, little, quick trip. But you're not out buying your EV as your main car because of all of the, I think, concerns that consumers have expressed. And that gave me very interesting insight into the consumer and their preferences.
Well, what about this insight from looking east toward where you are from out here in the provinces? Am I crazy to say this, that the members of the government in Washington, D.C., the ruling class elites, are all head up on electric vehicles because everything is condensed and shoved together more tightly in the Northeast. Commutes are shorter.
Right.
Distances are shorter. Electric vehicles make sense where here in the state of Texas, which is the size of a lot of countries,
correct,
an electric vehicle, I commute daily. I have a daily commute of 100 miles between where I sleep and where I work.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I live in Dallas. I own radio stations in Tyler, Longview, Texas, at 97 miles to the east. And I go back and forth 4 days a week. And there's no way in the world an EV is going to work for me.
You know what I believe in? Capitalism.
Yeah, me too.
And the freedom of consumer choice. So I agree. You don't need people on the eastern seaboard in D.C. in the Beltway making policy decisions for you in Texas, someone who is commuting 97 miles a day. Let's let the consumer decide. Let's give everyone options and let's empower you, the consumer, to decide what you, the consumer, wants to drive.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that, Taylor. I think they would say to me, well, you living that far from where you work is despoiling the planet,
yeah.
And you've got to make a choice as to, you can't do that anymore. You're wrong for doing it. You need to live closer to where you work.
Do you they know would what we should do, though, about spoiling the planet? Hmm. How dirty is it to mine the nickel and the lithium to make an EV?
Never gotten anybody on the left to ever acknowledge that.
How dirty is it to hold on to that EV when the battery dies? Are we recycling it? Where never are we
gotten,
putting it?
Never gotten anybody that is all in on EVs to acknowledge that.
And I am pro EV. I'm pro whatever people want. But I think we should start having smart policy decisions. Let's look at the entire supply chain. I care about the environment. Most people deeply care about the environment. No one wants to breathe smog, right? We all care about the environment. How do we transition, if that's the path, in a responsible way? And let's look at the entire supply chain. Let's look about all of the EVs that China's making for us, the money that we're sending over there. Let's talk about the cleanliness of that. Let's look at not just the EV emissions, but the entire supply chain, including the batteries, including recycling at the end of life. And then let's have a good policy conversation about how to move forward and save the planet at the same time.
Yeah, and where is the power going to come from to charge the batteries?
It's a good question. Is it coming from coal-fired plants? Is it coming from wind and solar? You tell me. I don't know.
In Texas, I can tell you, Texas is the biggest wind-producing state and the biggest solar-producing state of all 50 states in the country. And at any given moment in the state of Texas, you can go on a website, ERCOT.org, Electric Reliability yes. Council of Texas, ERCOT, and they have a real-time dashboard show you where the energy's coming from. But I tell you what, you kill off the natural gas plants, the state goes dark. And if you add a bunch of electric vehicles in the numbers that the Biden administration wants, every electric vehicle, I was told by somebody, and I haven't verified this, but it sounds plausible, it represents another air conditioner.
Wow. See, and you told me you weren't smart on this subject. You lied. Look at you with the facts. You're citing ERCOT.
Yeah, well, ERCOT, this great backwater, knuckle-dragging state of Texas is actually on the bleeding edge of solar and wind energy production. But there's no way in the world we could withstand 20 or 30 million EVs right. coming online.
Which is why I think we should be having smart policy discussions about how do we do it all. First of all, the gas that we burn in the U.S. is, I don't know, X percent cleaner than the oil that we're importing from Saudi Arabia and Venezuela, right? We burn
yes.
clean gas. So let's
yes.
have that conversation.
And we have it in abundance.
Correct. Let's talk about nat gas. Let's talk also about nuclear that is now cleaner and safer than it has been ever in our history. Let's talk about wind and solar. Let's talk about the storage of renewables to transition the grid in a sustainable way. You don't just flip the lights off and on in any single second. The transition is just that, a transition. And let's talk about using all of these energies together in a holistic way. And let's talk about grid security, preventing cyber attack. I mean, again, there's a whole host of issues that I feel like people like me, people like you, people at home listening feel like they aren't being heard when it comes to all of these. We all just want a responsible solution, and we don't want things jammed down our throats.
That's the thing, a couple that we socialize with, he's a physician, A lot of his work day, he's a radiologist. A lot of his work day is spent at a computer terminal in the office in his home. It's a fairly short commute to the hospital where he works. He has a Tesla, gorgeous car. My goodness. Gorgeous vehicle. But it's completely unsuitable for me. Good for him.
Exactly. That's what I say is Teslas are amazing. And you know why I like them is because they are built by a brilliant billionaire who happens to be an immigrant who came here the right way to work hard, to succeed, to believe in capitalism, to believe in entrepreneurship, to believe in fighting all of the DC bureaucrats who wouldn't invite him to the White House because he doesn't believe in unionization. So we have Elon Musk, who has built a company basically on like the back of his entire fortune, wanting it to succeed. And it's been a huge success. It's a great car. The software is incredible. I don't own one, but I've sort of ridden in them, and the full self-driving capabilities are incredible.
It's a phenomenal car.
But again, that happens for certain people, maybe in New York City where I am. And again, if it works for you, or if you're out in the suburbs and you're wealthy enough to have multiple cars, it could work for you for short distances. And so I actually love the Tesla story because, like you said, it's so creative, entrepreneurship, ingenuity. It's everything I think that an American entrepreneur should be, right?
Yeah, but like, yeah.
It's a total success story.
That's wonderful. And this guy's a physician, makes a lot of money. In the 30 seconds we have left, what about the person who's not making a lot of money, and if he can't buy a 10-year-old used internal combustion engine vehicle, has no transportation? What about that person?
Exactly. Bingo. And why isn't D.C. listening to that person and hearing and validating that person?
The very people they purport to be on the side of.
I wish I had a better answer for you, but I don't.
Very well. Hey, listen, I'm run long here, which I'm going to get in trouble. But Taylor, it's always fun.
This was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Taylor Riggs, co-host of the Big Money Show on the Fox Business Network. There she goes. A great addition to the show. Here we go. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
It's the show that never hits the books.
I love the poorly educated.
You're listening to Fox Across America with Jimmy Failla.
Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla here on Fox Across America, 888-788-9910. Frank, Rockland County, New York. You've been patient. Let's get you on. What do you have to say?
I called in. I told him, first of all, we're the third rock from the sun. I've listened to your whole talk on EVs. And, we're the third rock from the sun. The sun's not changing temperature. And we're on what we know of right now to be our fifth ice age. The only difference between this one ending and the last five, our humans weren't around to end those. And they still ended because the planet was artificially cooled. It wants to go back to its natural state. I'm all for clean water and clean air. But to think that we're going to have some sort of effect as ants on this planet to stop this planet going back to its natural state is ridiculous. I mean, we're the third rock from the sun, as I said before. On top of that, if you take everyone on the planet who's either being forced by mandate or this voluntarily will be into this climate change show.
Yeah.
You're looking at maybe 1.2 billion people?
Yeah. Well, it's like Barack Obama said, this will be the day that the seas stop their rise. A bunch of politicians are going to affect the planet that's been around for 5 billion years.
Ours, or to put solar panels on their house, or they're voluntarily doing it.
No,
and they're fighting
not.
Against the tide of 7 billion other people who want to be lifted out of poverty via coal.
Yeah, that's right. And Barack Obama buys a property right on the water's edge at Martha's Vineyard, but he's telling us that we have to drive electric vehicles so we can stop the rise of the sea level rise. I mean, the hypocrisy is just dripping. Hey, I appreciate your call, Frank. More of Fox Across America, Paul Gleiser, sending in for Jimmy Failla, just on the other side, along with Congressman Debbie Lesko. Don't go away. It is Fox Across America. Paul Gleiser sitting in for Jimmy Failla. We're rounding the fourth turn, heading toward the end of the show here in hour three. On the line with us, one of my favorite people to talk to when I have the honor of hosting this show, Congresswoman Debbie Lesko from the 8th Congressional District of Arizona, Northwest Phoenix. Congresswoman, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Paul. It's always great to be on.
Well, listen, I want to test something that the new RNC chair, Michael Whatley, said earlier in the show, that he is completely optimistic that the Republicans will not only hold the House, but expand the majority. Do you share that optimism?
Well, I sure am working hard to make sure that's the case, whether it is endorsing candidates, donating to candidates. I just talked to a group of Republican patriots last night and said we have to do everything we can to get a Republican majority in the House, keep it, get a Republican majority in the Senate, and elect President Trump, because otherwise our country is going to be in a continued sad state of affairs under President Biden.
Well, let me re-underscore why this keeps me awake at night. I think the nightmare scenario is that Donald Trump wins the presidency, wins the Electoral College vote, and is elected president, but the Democrats take the House, because you only have a one-seat majority now. So the Democrats take the House. I think the first thing they might try to do once they're sworn in on January 3rd or whatever day it is immediately decide they're not going to certify the vote. Do you think that's plausible? Because it worries me.
It's definitely plausible. I mean, they did that in the past, that they didn't certify. There was a number of Democrat Congress members that didn't certify several Republican elected presidents. And then, of course, they turned it around on us when 147 of us voted to not certify in Arizona and Pennsylvania for Biden because the state laws weren't followed. But, you know,
that's being covered, an election denier. That, now you're an election right. denier. But
when the Democrats do it, they don't say a word. So you're right. I mean, I have come to realize that the Democrats will do anything and everything to stop President Trump and to push forward their agenda. I mean, my goodness sakes, they have impeached him 2 times, and they have all of these legal charges against him. These people are ruthless, and we have to fight like heck to save our country.
And I have said earlier in this show that they would not be this vehement, they would not be working this hard, and they wouldn't be prosecuting Donald Trump, they wouldn't have done anything to Donald Trump, if they didn't think he could win another term as president.
Well, that's definitely true. It always means that they're a threat to him. So, yeah, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that we have a Republican majority in the House, in the Senate, and Donald Trump is our next president, because we cannot afford, our country cannot afford another 4 years under President Biden. I mean, here in Arizona, the border is just a disaster. It's wide open. It's causing all kinds of problems here. We're spending millions upon millions of dollars housing illegal immigrants, providing health care for illegal immigrants, providing transportation for illegal immigrants. And this is just pure insanity what the Biden administration is doing.
Let me play you a piece of audio. Congressman Debbie Lesko from the 8th District of Arizona is on the line with us. Let me play you a piece of audio. It's Karine Jean-Pierre. She's on the phone, a phone interview with Mark Garrison of WBT Radio in Charlotte. And he asks the question that even Democrats are asking in private. He dares to say out loud the question. Let me play you this clip. It's cut 5.
They all said, would you please just ask her, does the president have dementia? And so before I move on from that, does he?
That is an incredibly offensive question to ask.
But you know people ask it.
Costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. And with that, thank you so much, Mark. Have an amazing, amazing day.
Wow. Wow.
And she hung up.
And she hangs up. You know, she didn't say no.
Well, you know, I serve with Congressman Ronnie Jackson, who was a doctor and for the president and for President Trump.
From the great state
really
of
wants,
from the great state of Texas. Let me go throw that.
I know. And he believes that President Biden needs a cognitive test. And I do, too, because you see him sometimes where he's doing pretty good. Right. So sometimes President Biden is doing OK. Other times he just looks out of it, like he's staring into space. He has to look at his teleprompter. He doesn't know what to say. He doesn't know where to move. And so I'm not a medical doctor, but it sure does look like his cognitive ability is not always there. And, you know, he's 81 years old. I get it. But you shouldn't be running for president if you have those problems.
Well, the answer that Karine Jean-Pierre gave, number one, she said costs have gone down because of what this president has been able to do. That's clearly they've just stopped rising as quickly, but they haven't gone down. So what she said in trying to duck the question was untrue. And but the bigger question is, why not just say no? Why not just say no? The answer, because you can't say no, right?
Yeah, well, that would be my assumption, is that she can say no. I mean, anybody that looks at him knows that he has difficulty sometimes in the way that he shuffles and that type of thing. But beyond that, beyond his cognitive problems, his policies are terrible, absolutely terrible. Costs at the grocery stores are up so much. Our gasoline prices are rising again in Arizona. People cannot afford to live under this president's policies. And so not only is he having cognitive difficulties, but his policies are absolutely terrible for the American people. And the number one issue in Arizona is border security. And he has these open border policies that are causing, according to the U.S. Border Patrol chief, it's a national security risk. He just said that the other day. And there's terrorists that are being caught. Who knows how many aren't being caught that are on the terrorist watch list that are crossing our border. We are spending millions and millions of dollars. That budget that we just passed in Congress that I voted against was spent millions and millions of more dollars on housing and health care for illegal immigrants, but had no policies in it to actually secure the border. And this is the problem. We need to use our budget authority in the House to get border security, because it is a huge national security risk.
Representative Debbie Lesko is with us from Arizona. So let me ask you this, because Texas and Arizona have this in common. They're border states. We're both massively impacted by the wide open borders and this flood of illegal immigrants coming into our states. But here's the difference between Arizona and Texas. Arizona is viewed as a swing state. Texas is not. How is it, given all of that, that Arizona is a swing state?
Well, I think all kinds of people from California have moved into our state because California has such ridiculous policies and high taxes and crazy energy policies that people are fleeing that state and coming to Arizona. Unfortunately, they haven't connected the dots to realize that the reason they're fleeing from California is because all the Democrat liberal policies, right? And so now we have a Democrat governor who just vetoed a really great border security bill that a Republican majority state legislature passed out of both the Arizona House and the Senate, and she vetoed it. And all she wants, she's calling for $752 million she wants from the feds in order to house and process and give health care to illegal immigrants. And that's not the answer. We
why
need
not
to
keep
stop
them out?
The
why
flow.
Not keep them out to begin with, and then you don't need $752 million.
No, and that's the difference between Republicans and Democrats. Okay, Republicans in the Arizona legislature, in the U.S. House, in the U.S. Senate, we want to secure the border, and that's what President Trump did when he was the president. If you just compare December of 2020, under President Trump, there were 74,000 people that were apprehended at the southern border. You go to December of 2023, it's 302,000 in 1 month. That is the population of Cincinnati, Ohio, in 1 month that was apprehended, let alone all the people that got away. I mean, we don't know who's all flooding across this border. This is absolute insanity. And then President Biden, in addition to all of those over 9 million people that have crossed the southern border since he's been president, then he flies in another 30,000 a month from Haiti, Nicaragua. What's the other? Anyway, he has 30,000 a month from four different countries. Oh, Cuba, coming in that he's just saying, okay, you're legally able to be here. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that they want more Democrat congressional seats. That's the only reason I can think why anybody would want an open border like they do.
Let me shift gears here on you, Congresswoman Debbie Lesko from Arizona. You mentioned the budget deal, that this omnibus thing that just that you did not vote for, that my delegation where I am didn't, members of the Congress where I am didn't vote for. But I've asked this question. I ask it of just about every member of Congress to whom I speak, Democrat and Republican. And I'm going to ask you, what is it going to take to get the House of Representatives back to passing a budget in regular order, the 12 appropriations bills that the House is supposed to pass?
You know, I don't know. I mean, last year when, you know, there was the 15 votes for Kevin McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy had to agree to a lot of things, including regular order, doing the 12 different appropriations bills and that type of thing, and putting conservatives on the rules committee so that conservative things would get done. Well, what's happened now is that we don't even go through the rules committee on this budget bill. It didn't even go through the rules committee. It went bypass the rules committee and went right to the floor and needed a two-thirds vote, which is called a suspension vote. And that means more Democrats had to vote for it. So more Democrats voted for this budget bill than Republicans. It's very frustrating. I think Speaker Mike Johnson is a very honorable man. He's a man of integrity. He's in a very difficult position. He does not want to shut down the government. And so he was always a proponent of these separate 12 appropriations bills. But now he, too, has bundled them together. So there were six appropriations bills at one deadline and six last week. And so it's very frustrating to me as a member of Congress who wants regular order, wants appropriations bills, wants conservative policies. It is very frustrating. Now, Republicans in the House have passed a lot of good bills. We passed border security bills. We passed a bill that says you cannot mandate all electric vehicles. We pushed back on the Biden policies, but then these things pass out of the House and they're stuck in the Senate. Schumer won't hear them. And that's why it's important that we get a Republican majority in the Senate, keep the House. And for goodness sakes, we need President Trump in there to try to get these things done. But you're right. It's very frustrating. I don't know what it's going to take, but maybe higher margins of Republicans.
Or something, because the country's $34 trillion in debt. The Biden administration just proposed a budget that would include a deficit of another $3 trillion. And I don't know how much longer. You know, and the thing that I keep running up against in my own brain, Congresswoman, the thing that I keep bumping up against, I've been saying this for 20 years, but nonetheless, it's still true. At some point, you can't do this anymore. And we're going to find out the hard way.
No, and when, you know, I used to serve in the state, Arizona state legislature before I was in Congress, and it was the same there. Everybody wants more spending. Once there's a spending program, people don't want to give it up. And then usually the liberal media screams and yells if you take away any funding, because quite frankly, most projects are good projects, right? If you're helping six people, if you're helping, you know, helping people, and so it's cast in that light. But pretty soon, we are not going to have enough money for a Department of Defense for other basic functions in our country. I mean, the interest that we are paying on this $34.5 trillion in national debt is very soon going to exceed our entire budget for a year on the Department of Defense. That is a huge national security risk. And so I have not voted personally for a budget bill since last year when we had a budget bill that actually cut, I think it was 20% government funding, it cut government funding and had border security in it. We passed it out of the House. It got stuck in the Senate again because the Democrats weren't going to pass it. But ever since then, I have voted no because of just what you have said. We cannot continue down this path. And so I am one vote. So we need more people to wake up and tell their Congress members that they can no longer vote for these budgets that continue to increase spending. We can't afford it.
I totally agree with you. And on that note of agreement, I say thank you for being a part of the show. Debbie Lesko, well, Congresswoman from Arizona's 8th Congressional District. By the way, do you include Surprise Arizona, where my world champion Texas Rangers just wrapped up training camp?
Well, I used to, but then redistricting cut them out. So I no longer represent Surprise, but I know all the great people in Surprise. And so I know them well, and we have lots of spring training here. So it's an absolutely great place to live. It's sunny. It's beautiful outside right now.
In opening day and baseball season's tomorrow, that may not be a big deal to you, but it is to us here in Texas because we have a defending world champion.
Well, I congratulate you, and baseball is fun, and we have tons of people that come to Arizona every year for spring training, and I enjoy it just as much as you.
Debbie Lesko, Congresswoman from the 8th District of Arizona. Thanks. There she goes. Here we go. Back to wrap it up after the break. Stay with us.
You're hanging out with Jimmy Failla on Fox Across America.
As Jimmy Failla says in this segment every day, it's the bottom of the ninth here on Fox Across America. In the case of this bottom of the ninth, it's bottom of the ninth with nobody on, two out, and a two-strike count. The show is almost over. Hey, thanks for being a part of the program today. Thanks to Mike and Josh for making everything work in New York so that I can be on the air here from Texas. Thank you for listening. Jimmy will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is opening day in Texas. Just found out it's not opening day in New York because of rain. But baseball season starts. That's a good thing about being in America. We can all come together on baseball. I'll see you next time. Paul Gleiser for Jimmy Failla. Have a great day.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.